Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 58. Okay, now Smriti is describing the creation. From the words of the Vedas, Brahma created names and forms of all beings, of the devatas, and of the development of rituals. Vishnu Purana 1.5.63. But so that means is that everything's created by Shabda, by the scriptures. But it's not that being created that it doesn't have the, how you say, the context of the... it doesn't have the context of that the demigods have forms and they can expand. Does that make sense? But everything's being created by Brahma. Right? So the words themselves are creating everything. That's because there's the original forms of that. And so that's by the Lord's potency, it can expand. Right? Bhagavatam verse reference. Karma Mimamsa philosophers reject the explanation of devas as embodied beings on the grounds that it contradicts the Veda in which the names of the devas are found. Right? So, because it's created by the names, that means everything's like that. So if you say, oh, but they have their names in the Veda, they can't have a gross form. But as it's pointed out, Brahma created everything from the words of the Veda. So if demigods don't have a body, then nobody else should either. Right? Nothing should be there. Yeah. They reason that if the Veda is eternal, the devas must also be eternal since their forms are not different from their eternal names, right? So they're only going to do that if they don't have a body. Because if they have a material body, it'll be temporary. Understand? So basically it's the same philosophy as the impersonalists. Right? Why would that be? Because they're karmis, not jnanis. Right? And karmi doesn't mean not smart. It just means that it's your lifestyle is not about fruit of benefit as such, you know, about enjoying the senses. Like that. You reject, so in other words, you're into that mood of renunciation and trying to enjoy. While these ones are into engaging the senses, and through that they'll enjoy. But now what's the basis of all this? Right? So, when we go back, then the living entity has that position of trying to control and enjoy. And so what does that mean? It's not control and enjoy with Krishna. It's control and enjoy without Krishna. Right? So that means then when they're dealing with everything, then that they're dealing on the impersonal platform. So even though we say they're theistic in that they accept the Veda and they follow the system of Varnashram and their duties, you know, because there's higher order, the higher authority, they'll be called theistic. But technically, on one platform, they're not actually theistic. Because they don't believe the Lord has a form, everything else, how it's all connected. So the idea is that if there's form, it must be, it's temporary, therefore material, therefore it can't be eternal. So they accept that the Veda is eternal, and that way they're theistic. But they're only theistic on the platform of Brahman, because Brahman is eternal. They accept that principle. But everything else that's temporary can't be eternal. Therefore, it's, you know, then you can't, all these things. So the devas, their forms, everything else, nothing can have forms. Does that make sense? Yeah, one second.
It should just be that the it's just whatever the scriptures are.
Not Boston?
You just take.
It doesn't have.
Then you take.
If we did this, we should all have them. It's like another course.
Anyway,
we have this gap. Hey.
So five fingers.
I mean, what's going on?
Measure what that is and then multiply.
Impersonal Brahman.
Yeah, now it's an impersonal Brahman.
Yes, there's
yeah, and we keep talking, no, so everything goes in there. Who's talking in Brahman? But they are there anyway, they are in classes.
Okay, so their concept is actually impersonal because they're leaving God out of the picture, actually, as a person. So that means they are still dealing with the Supreme. Every living entity is dealing with the Supreme. But because they leave him out as a person, then they're dealing with technically the impersonal aspects of Brahman and then the half-half aspect of the localized aspect of Paramatma. Right? But the concept here is even the form of Paramatma must be material because it's temporarily manifest within your meditation or anything like this. So this becomes the difficulty, is they can't, if it has form, then it must be, therefore it's temporary, therefore then it can't be eternal. So eternal simply means Brahman. So the Karmis and the Jnanis, they'll think in the same way. Like that? It's just material thought, because it's you're leaving God out of the picture. Even if you add God, it's only a material concept of God. Right? Okay, we get the concept, he's the greatest, he's, you know, everything like that. So, but the point that comes is that, so what's his form? What does he do? Oh, you know, he doesn't have a form, but he sits in a big chair and says, this one's right, this one's left. But the point is how does he point with his fingers if he doesn't have a form? You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't make sense. It's that whenever they try to apply whatever works for them, that's then you know, God. And what doesn't work for them, then that's not. You understand? Yes.
You say that deistic on the platform of Paramatma would be God as the order supplier.
Yes. It means he's the order supplier, but it's a matter of whether they have a material concept of God or they have an actual concept of God. So even in theism, there's three levels, right? So the first level would be, the lowest level would be on Pranamoy, where the concept of that there's a supreme is advantageous for social structure and order, because if there's a supreme and a lawmaker, then of course, then socially it'll go nicely, but they actually don't care about God, they only care about the social system. So it's actually an atheistic concept. It's just because it works. Because if they're not interested in that, they don't care. Right?
Fear, can you also say?
Sorry?
Can you also say fear? Like they're driven by fear?
Yeah, you could say driven by fear, but fear can go all the way up, because even the demigods are driven by fear. But yes, you would say fear is there. Yeah. Then, but not necessarily, because it's only when it's appropriate for them that they care or not. Right? Then in Manamoy, when they accept the Vedic conclusions or they accept the principle that there's a God, you know, like this, and he's in control and all that, then at that point, then you could say that's theistic. But it still may be materialistic, their concept. So yes, there is a God, but their concept of him is materialistic. Right? So that's going to be there for the karmis and jnani. So on the platform of manamoy and vijnanamoy, they can both have that material, theistic but materialistic concept of God. Right? In other words, they accept. So how is it theistic? They accept the Veda. They accept the authority of the Veda. They follow the Varnashram system. They base their you know, fundamental principles on the Veda. You know, even though it's ultimately all for their own enjoyment, but in any case, they're trying to do it through the Veda, so they're pious. Then you have those who actually understand God.
And so at this level, it will be order supplier. The Lord is order supplier for karmis. Because
order supplier for karmis, yes. But the point is it's that's more general. Here we're talking about whether they have a spiritual or material concept of God. Because even if you have a spiritual concept, you can still see him as order supplier. You understand? That's why we're not making that distinction at this point. So, not that they don't have that, but that's not the primary aspect of it. Then we get to the next level where they understand the spiritual position of God. Now it's a matter of, are they encumbered by karma and jnana in their understanding of the Lord and acceptance of the Lord, or it's in pursuit of pure bhakti or on the platform of pure bhakti. Yeah. Does that make sense?
This is the anamaya platform. The anamaya platform. Vijnanamaya platform.
No, it's anandamaya. But it doesn't mean that on the platform of anandamaya that you're not being affected, it's not mixed with karma and jnana.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So then, the difference between That's why then the whole discussion on the forms that are used are the same. The materialist, the theistic person and the devotional person, they all use the Vedic system. It's all based on the authority of the Veda. Right? Does that make sense? The difficulty comes is that those who drop below manamoy, then they will only pick and choose if they use anything or not from the Vedic system. That's why it's considered atheistic. Because atheistic moralism, like modern moralism, that's atheistic, because it's not based on God. Right? Say theistic, okay, God gave 10 commandments, this is what you should do and not do. Like that. But the point is that what modern is based on? There's remnants of that, but they don't attribute it to that. It's just that everybody knows that you're supposed to be nice and not steal. And so it's just a feeling that they, as a group, all agree to. You know, it's just like bees. They all share everything. You know? So that's it. It's just a social thing. It's not actually theistic. It's not based on these are the laws of God. And in fact, they'll say laws of nature. They won't even attribute that to God. So that's the whole point, is that it's based on what works for their social condition. Right? You know, so it's just like, you know, how you say, you go back in time, abortion's considered bad because, you know, you're talking about life, you're talking about relationships, you're talking about responsibility, all those things. So since these days that's not actually very important, therefore then abortion becomes okay. You know, it's just practical. You know, the woman's in control of her own body. But the point is, yeah, so then you kill or not kill your body, but there's another body inside you. So therefore, what's your right to kill that? Just because it happens to be sitting there? You know, so then it's my house, I'm in control of my house, so whoever's in my house, I like them or don't like them, I can kill them or not. You know what I'm saying? So it's just what society itself accepts as practical. You know, it's not practical to have a career and try to raise a baby. So therefore, then everything changes. You understand? So that's why we say it's atheistic. Because it keeps changing. You can't keep up with it. You know, you're sitting there talking with somebody, using the same words that you've always been using. Now one of the words you use is a buzzword, and they get all upset and all this and that, and how can you talk like that? But, you know, before you talked like that, and everybody was fine with it. You understand? So that's it, is that the modern think, it moves however the modes of nature move it. Of course, that's controlled by the Lord, but that's not accepted. That we're thinking, no, I'm free thinking. No, you're thinking according to the modes. You're not free at all. Only devotees are free. Oh, but they're archaic, they're institutional, they're this and that. No, they're the ones that are free. You know? And the ones that think they're free, then they're like the animals. They're controlled by the laws of nature. Right? You have a dog. Cat walks by. What's it going to do?
Free to run after the cat.
Yes, like that. Yeah, it's free to run after the cat. No, it's forced to run after the cat, because that's just what it does. Right? So the dog will try to bite the cat will scratch the dog's nose. You know? It's just the way it works, you know.
Sometimes when you see Christianity or in Muslim religions, though, some sentiments, they really resemble as if they accept even the each of the Lord. How do we characterize that?
It's just...
By your will, by your desire.
Yes, no, but it's good. It means, in other words, anything that is coming from the proper sources in the religious principles, they're worshiping God, but their concept of Him may not be based on pure love. That's the whole point. So as much as it is correct, that much is good. And what's not correct, that's where the weakness will be. You know what I'm saying? That's why pure love is not developed. Is because there's some materialistic aspect to it. Right? Because in mixed devotional service, you're not going to get pure devotion. So that science of what is pure devotion and what is bhakti, that's described nicely in the Vedas. But you have to get that also in parampara so you can properly understand it. So it's not that others aren't worshipping God. It's just that their understanding of God is not very great. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, the girls at the concert, are they not worshiping Justin Bieber? Right? But how much they understand him and what this and that, that's not very great, but they have some, you know, attitude, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's going on. They have some inclination towards God and respect towards God, but their understanding is not complete. That's why we say is that there may be that materialistic aspect. Mm-hmm. Not that individuals there can't have a proper aspect, but it's going to be individual. That's why we're saying is that therefore the form is one thing. Does that make sense? So the Vedic system, there's one system. You need to maintain yourself. There's one system, that's the Varnashram system. Varnashram is how to maintain yourself. Right? So, point, since people have to maintain themselves, it's really hard to chant your japa if you're dead. Right? If there's no body, then it's really hard to chant your japa, since your beads and all that have a particular external manifestation.
Even when you're hungry, it's hard.
Yeah.
Even before the dead part.
Yeah, before the dead part, yeah. I mean, I've seen people, they emotional stress, they stop chanting, you know, or all kinds of other things, economic or family considerations. So all that, then they drop it. So that's the idea, is if you follow the Varnashram system, it keeps it as much as possible on even keel, so there's the best possibility of performing one sadhana. That's the whole idea of it. Now, there are those who are just doing that, that are not doing it devotionally, but at least they're purified and they're pious in a way that's favorable for devotional service. In other words, following the principles of Varnashram is favorable for devotional service in a supportive way, but it's not devotional service. It's only when you add devotional service, then it takes on the transcendental quality. So therefore, that's why we say Varnashram and Bhakti. But when someone who's practicing, who is situated nicely in devotion, is applying Varnashram, then we'll call it Daiva Varnashram or Sad Dharma. So then there's a non-difference there. But in the beginning, one is performing the activities of the direct, you know, devotional service. You know, chanting, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, living in the Dham. Right? And outside of that, basically whatever they're doing, let's say they're following the Varnashram system, so is just going to be Varnashram. But with time, as they start to develop and understand Krishna and how everything is Krishna, everything's connected to Krishna, it's all for Krishna's pleasure, then aspects of their varnashram duties start being connected to devotional service. To at one point, there's nothing that is material. It's all connected to Krishna. But the rules don't change. Right? They might drop things that are simply for their own, their own purposes. But, does that make sense? But, you know, like worship of the demigods or other things that they may do to get material benefit, those will be dropped. But the basic form will remain. It won't change. Does that make sense? And that time we just call it devotional service. We'll just say it's called a devotional lifestyle. That's why the confusion comes up. Is varnashram material or spiritual? Is what we do, how we dress, how we eat, how we behave, is that material or spiritual? It depends on your consciousness. So those that say that it's all material, it's just all archaic, it's just all institutional, that's material consciousness. So yes, they will not be able to engage in the Lord's service. But the problem is their alternative to the Vedic will also not be properly engaged. Because why? What's the consideration? Themselves only. They'll say it's about society, but it's how they want to be seen by society, not how society wants to see them. Does that make sense? Yes.
It's interesting then, when Mahaprabhu met Chakravartis, he asked what's the sadhya and what's the sadhana, and they said the sadhana is varnashram, and sadhya is the five kinds of liberation.
Right.
Including sayuja, somehow or other. And he chastised them for that.
Yes.
And then later, you know, in the conversation with Ramananda Rai and Sanatana Goswami, he explained what is our sadhya and what is our sadhana. So it's very different in a way. But then, you know, people confuse because varnashram, not varnashram, this.
No, but. Yes, yes.
It's all mixed.
Yes, it's all mixed because it's one system. Because Krishna is everything, so therefore, in one sense, it's all mixed. But once you understand Krishna, then there's no mix. It's one thing. So they're taking it that the practice of varnashram is the devotional service. So for them, when it says dasyam, right, in the nine processes, dasyam means following varnashram, you know, and offering the results to the Lord. But Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion, when explaining dasyam, very much specifically points out that's not how we interpret it. But that doesn't mean we don't follow varnashram. But it's for us, it's not a sadhana, like that. So it's just how we situate ourselves. We follow varnashram, so we're varnashramites. So for us, it's sambandha. For them, it's abhideya. For us, it's sambandha. Right? And then gaining liberation, that's just a side benefit. You know, just like you order a milkshake, you get a straw along with it. You know, it's just like that. It's not about the straw, but you get it along with it. You know, otherwise, if the straw was the thing, then you just go and buy a straw and walk around with a straw sticking out of your mouth like that. You know, so therefore, it just comes along with it. So for us, is the liberation is not the main thing, but in Vaikuntha, it is. That's the difference there. That's the difference between Goloka and Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha liberation is important. Now you could say, is if they're mentioning the five, because they're very strict about Advaita, so they're simply taking it that you are situated on the transcendental platform and appreciate the Lord, though you may not be doing any specific service. So they would be talking about the Shanta Bhaktas. And then the other four, that would mean the ones in Dasya Rasa. So, because they'll not tolerate anything that even, you know, it's like, what do you call it? Mukti pad, you know, it's like that. It's just, no, it's just like, you know. So, that's why it's confusing. That's why we have to hear from the Acharyas. So they explain this. So, the Varnashram, then it has its position as, it's the most useful way to maintain yourself. Because artha comes from dharma, not by some mechanics. But if you follow the mechanics of dharma, yes, then you'll get the results of the mechanics of artha. And that you can be applied to take care of the senses. But when it's performed with proper understanding of the Lord, then there's more there that comes. You also get the devotion on doing that activity in connection with the Lord. Otherwise, it's okay, you're maintaining yourself and you're doing devotional service. So, yes, there's progress. It doesn't get in the way. But at some point, then you see is that this is, you're doing, this even works and this even functions because it's Krishna. But why is it by work people will pay you? Everywhere in the world they understand that. So why is that? Because it's God's principle. Why is it that there's a concept of economics, that there's something of value that you can trade for other things of value? Where is that concept of value? That comes from Krishna. Why is it that everybody wants to be happy? Right? All these things, they're all common. That's why every culture of the world, you can study them because they're basically the same. You know, some slight detail on how they consider, you know, how they'll apply it. Like that. So, but if you look at it in principle, there's basically no difference between all the social elements, all the religious, all these different things. They're based on the same principle, just due to lack of knowledge and training. Then the forms that they use may be recommended or not. Does that make sense? You know, just like in all religions, there'll be respect for those who are more situated in that religious principle practice, or especially those who lead it. You know, they're priests or they're scholars or, you know, they're saintly persons. All will have that. You know, even in the simple primitive tribes, they have their, you know, their medicine man or their, you know, their whatever it is. They have their saintly people. You know, so that's the thing. It's always there. These things are inherent. So they're based on the nature of the qualities of the soul. That's why you see the commonality. Is that what it says? Yeah. And so when you remove that completely, then you'll see a commonality again, because then there's only eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And whether that's done as a group, whether it's done as individuals, you know, like lions walk around in a group, but tigers never in a group. They're always alone. You know, so like that. It's that, so... So you can categorize, like if you have a book on animals, it's always eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. You know, this one sleeps in a tree, this one sleeps in a hole, this one sleeps standing up, you know, like that, you know, so like that. So it's always going to be the same thing because you've removed the God element. And then in humans, that's uniqueness, because now they do the same thing, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, but in connection with the Supreme consciously. The other ones are doing it by the laws of nature. They're doing it because they're conscious of it. So that's why, like you said, it's confusing, but you have to understand it's because one thing can do both things. I have a pot, I have a spoon, I have some potatoes. Then I can cook those on a totally mundane platform or on a spiritual platform. So is the cooking process in the deity kitchen, is it material or spiritual? But the mechanics are exactly the same as, you know, the Indian restaurant next door, you know, that's a total materialist. So that's where the confusion comes. So because, oh, it's material, it's thrown out. But that's the whole point of Niyamagraha. We either follow it because it's supposed to be done, it's the good thing to do, or we reject it because we don't think it's a good thing to do. But in either case, it's because we think it's a good thing to do. Or, you know, because authority said, or because I'm the authority. But in any case, both of them, it's going to be their mind. I like being pious. I like following authority. I like, you know, being independent. I don't like authority. But in any case, they're both trying to please their mind. That's why they're both material. That's what he's saying, is that... So, therefore, those who follow, don't follow. And then those who follow, you have karmis and jnanis. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, so you're going to have the same thing. Even outside Varnashram, you're still going to have the karmis and jnanis. Those who it's more intellectual, and those who it's just, you know, being, you know, the payasanos. You know.
Anandamaya, those who are pursuing for karma and jnana, they are like karma mishra bhaktas and jnana.
Yes, it'll be those who they have faith in God, like the demigods. Yes. You know, that's why it mentions that there's those who they're performing their activities, but they're interested in the benefits they'll get. They go to the heavenly planets. So it's not that they have a material concept of God. Like Indra, he doesn't have a material concept of God, he just forgets him. You know, due to his facility and position and power. Right? But when you remind him, then it's proper.
And Vijnanamaya and Manomaya are like Jnanamishrava. Sorry.
No, that will be then we're saying that is the consciousness, because that's the goal, right? The Vijnanamaya, his goal is liberation, right? The Manomaya, his goal is material facility and enjoyment.
And they're using bhakti element of Varnashrama.
Everybody has to use some bhakti. Otherwise, how will it work? Because that is the Abhideya, right? The Shastras say that you're supposed to worship the Lord, right? That direct meaning, that's Abhida, right? So then applying the direct meaning, Abhida, that becomes Abhideya, right? So therefore, without some bhakti, no process in the Veda works. But the problem is the bhakti permanent or is the bhakti temporary? Right? Means, let's say you have a mixed devotee, his application may be temporary, but in his mind, the concept is it's eternal. So that's why he's a devotee. While then someone else who may be very expert at following that, but their concept is not eternal. Right? Veda may be eternal, but anything else, not, that's a karma. Right? So it's not that the devotee, when they say it's mixed devotion, it's not that the devotion is not mixed with Vijnanamaya and all these other four platforms, right? So Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, there may be a mix there. But it's not that his consciousness is there. It may be affected by it, but his consciousness is Anandamaya. That's why within Anandamaya, then we'll say there's neophytes, there's Madhyamas, and there's Uttamas. Right, so therefore, those on the neophyte platform, there may be stronger that aspect of mixed devotional service. So they have a proper understanding of God, but they are distracted by karma and jnana. Does this make sense? Right. So that's the whole point, is that as one progresses in devotional service, then those elements of the varnashram that you're following just for yourself, you'll correct that. It doesn't necessarily even mean there'll be a change. I may be cooking just because I like it. I'll offer it to Krishna. But I'll cook it, well, what would Krishna like? I want to do something for him. So it doesn't change that you're cooking. It may change your perspective on cooking. Now let's say you cook Indian things all the time anyway. You're a Gujarati, you cook Gujarati stuff. Okay? So that means you'll still be cooking Gujarati stuff. Right? Because, you know, Krishna's from Dwarka, you know, that's Gujarat. Gujarati stuff's good, right? It's not a problem, right? And what are all the best parts of Gujarati cooking, right? All the butter and ghee and everything like that. Krishna likes that, so hey, you're on the right track. Okay? Does that make sense? So there may be absolutely no change in what you cook. Or it may be that there is some change because, you know, what you like and what Krishna likes might be two different things. And so there might be some adjustment there. Does that make sense? It's because the main thing is he likes the devotion, but as you go and you expand on the devotion, then naturally the forms and activities will match Krishna's desire. You know, in the beginning it's just the results are for Krishna. Everything else is mine, right? The what I have, it's mine. The identity with it is mine. I operate it. I get the results, then, and which are mine, then I give them to Krishna. So the whole process becomes purified. But at some point, I'm Krishna's, all this is Krishna's, I engage this according to how Krishna likes to get the result that Krishna likes for Krishna's pleasure. You see? So, therefore, if there's a need for adjustment, you adjust. And if there's no need, you don't. That's the whole point. It's so individual and so perfect that people get confused. They don't catch how it functions. Does that make sense? All these are prayojanas. That's why it said is that the Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha are the, what do they call it? Purushartha. Right? I mean, that's what you want to gain. Right? So in other words, anamoy, you may be using science, but your purpose is sense gratification. Right? Or you may not be using science, and it's sense gratification. Right? You know, really unsophisticated, gross guy, he's just interested in sense gratification. He does that, but then you have sophisticated people they're only interested in. They use art, science, just to enjoy life. Does that make sense? You know, so then you have those who then understand the social structure. And it's not just using I can get better, it's if we use it together and all that, and that togetherness, and the idea that everybody will gain. Because what the person on Anamoy, he doesn't care if anybody else gains. He uses art and science and all that, but for his own purpose. Then the other one is there's consideration of others, so you can't take advantage. But it's still, what's the whole point? We'll all enjoy. So it's still Anamoy, but it's extended. That's why we call it Pranamoy. So it doesn't go up. It's looked at as, oh no, but you can keep going. But it's connected, it's rooted down. That's why it's anchored in sense gratification. Then Manamoy, now that's above that because now it's connected with the Supreme. That's connected up to the Lord. The Lord will extend down into the rituals, the mantras, the all these different activities. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's progress. But you may use that only because I'll get the benefit and go to the heavenly planet. So ultimately it's to enjoy. But one's religious to get your artha and then kama. Right? Does that make sense? While the others are basically irreligious to get them. You know, it's just what's socially acceptable. Does that make sense? Yeah. So,
can you say that Anandamaya, the very first step is liberation and the very process?
Yes, liberation is there. So technically, your Brahmavadis are on the platform of Anandamaya.
Yes.
Not Mayavadis. They just go to hell. Like that. Yes.
Can we say that the Karma Mimamsas, their approach is through enjoyment, and then the Mayavadis or others is through control?
Yes, you could say that. That's the focus. But you see, they want to control the ritual and everything to enjoy, and the other ones are giving up enjoyment, you know, to control, and that way, by controlling, they'll enjoy. Because you see, some people, they never do anything engaging their senses, but they really enjoy being in control. While others, don't worry about it so much, just, you know, enjoy life. You know? like that, you know. You know, he's saying, relax, you know, don't be so uptight, you know, just, you know, so you always get these kind of two flavors.
Yeah, because for the Karma Mimamsa, okay, God is there, okay, he's there, not there, no problem.
Yeah.
He's not there.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that it's never going to be purely one thing. Mm-hmm. It's always a mix of something. Because otherwise, how will there be a balance? But the problem is it with God or without? Like that. So if without, it's never actually balanced. So that's why it says only the devotee actually has good qualities. Because the other ones, it's just they're using these qualities for their own purpose. So that's not actually good. You know what I'm saying? Like if I'm giving in charity for prestige, will people actually consider that good? No. But it's charity, it's good, but I'm using it for prestige. So I'm using all these good qualities actually for my own control and enjoyment. So it's never actually that good. But the devotees, because they're doing it in line with the Lord, so therefore it's considered better. Right? That's the standard.
Okay. Maharaj, liberation is a stage where one does not have any facilities, because down are the karmis who get material facilities, and up are the devotees who will get some facilities.
Yeah, because they don't know there is facilities.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that. But that's not necessarily, those who are on the path of jnana, they'll be practicing vijnana moya. They want to get the liberation, but how many actually get there?
If
so,
in the facilities, what is the enjoyment that they experience there? Because
of having of being the supreme, of having nothing. In other words, let's say, okay, see, there's the karmis, there's the idea by having material facility and engaging the senses in connection with that, right? Maybe individually, maybe socially, that will be enjoyment, right? But now along with that, are there not problems?
Yeah.
Okay, let's just take for example, we have the Indian wedding. Now as far as social things go in the Indian scene, you don't get more of a concept of enjoyment than an Indian wedding,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, the best food, the best clothes, the best of everything in excess. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And so that's there. But is there any trouble? It's just enjoyment from beginning to end, from the moment they conceive of the wedding until... You know, it's finally over, right? It's a lot of hard work. But they'll call that enjoyment. While the jnanis, they simply see that's hard work. So my enjoyment is not doing any of that. And they're just happy not having to do that. You understand? So that's the difference between... So one's attached to attachment, and one's attached to detachment.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's why they're both materialists. But because they're detached from the material, it puts them closer to the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily that they're in one sense a better condition because of their non-acceptance of the importance of form and action and results. Therefore, then they can't understand the spiritual. Well, someone on the platform of karma, if they take up devotional service, it's much easier.
Mm-hmm.
If someone was a jnani before, an amayavadi before, certain things of devotional service are very hard for them. Though the piety and this and following all, it's very easy. More easy than stuff, unless someone is from a very, the renounced part of it. Right? Someone's from a pious background, it's easy to follow all these things, but there'll be the tendency to, put in one's own enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
Those who come from a background where they don't follow these things, then that will be tough for them. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
This would mean a Mayavadi is going to hell. Then,
But because there's no form for them, they don't accept form and stuff, then they don't go in a bucket. Right? So there is no enjoyment for them.
Yeah, but like, are some of them like first liberated for a small amount of time? And
not necessarily. They think they're liberated. Means they're getting some enjoyment from not being materially entangled, and from following because they will follow the Shastra and the recommendations of renunciation. So they'll follow nicely the rules of sannyas and things like that. So the better they follow that, the more happy they'll be. But that it's still just a neutral point. They're not technically liberated. You know what I'm saying? Because they think they become Brahman. They don't become Brahman. They are Brahman. But they're one kind of Brahman. Within the greater Brahman. But if they think, I am the Brahman, I'm the total thing, how that'll ever happen? So their idea of liberation is impossible. So how will they ever get it? But a Brahmavadi, we're all Brahman. Everything's Brahman. So this hut's Brahman, the ground's Brahman, we're Brahman, that bird over there is Brahman. But it's all different kinds of Brahman. So they don't have problem that there's form and shape, but it's all Brahman. You know what I'm saying? So those ones, then, because it's all transcendental. Like the four Kumaras, they were going to go visit Vishnu. They weren't devotees. They were Brahmavadis. You understand? But having come in contact with them, then they could see the difference between Brahman realization and Bhagavan realization. So then they took up devotional service.
in present day India, like would you say, like the ratio like between Brahmavadis and Mayavadis?
That I don't know. I haven't heard of such a text, but I would expect that most are all Mayavadis. You know, there may be a rare Brahmavadi, but they'll basically be all Mayavadis. The Shankara is the one everyone follows. You know what I'm saying? Because this Brahmavada are older schools. You know, so the contemporary that of Brahmavada that you hear of is only Mayavada. You hardly hear of anything else. And even within them, they keep changing their philosophy as they get defeated by the various acharyas. You know, I think the last one to come out is that one is that there's one, you know, how you say, this is all somebody's dream, one person's dream. So if it's just one person's dream, why even worry about it? Enjoy the dream. Because as soon as they wake up, you're gone anyway. So it doesn't matter. You don't, whether you follow sadhana or not, when they wake up, you're gone. You know, so they're struggling. Is that okay? So yeah, it means Chandrasekhar Acharya Kamakoti Pitam may not have ended up in such a great place. That make sense? Okay. They reason that if the Veda is eternal, the Devatas must also be eternal since their forms are not different from their eternal names. But the Mimamsakas are wrong because the eternality of the names and forms given in the Vedic hymns is seen in their connection to the eternal personality of Godhead, not to the temporary material world. Right? So the eternality is connected to the Lord, not to the material world. So therefore, they can have that eternal position and still have that material form. Because the position of Indra is eternal. Who's sitting in that seat? That's going to change 14 times in the day of Brahma. Right? So 14 times 360 times 100. So that's like, you know, 500,000 Indras. But the Indra is always the same. That's why when we just say Indra, we don't have to say, well, this specific Indra. So all the different pastimes that we know of Indra doing, those aren't the same Indra. Those are all different Indras. But the attitude is always basically the same.
Isn't that it is being defined? What should be the attitude of Indra, the position of Indra? A jiva taking the position of Indra, what must be his attitude? Is that already been defined because, you know?
Yeah, it's already defined and everything. Because you have to qualify. It's just like a job. You want to be the CEO of the company. You have to be qualified. But the point is, you're the CEO or not, someone will be the CEO. So therefore, then Indra is the king of the universe. So kings are already defined what they're supposed to do. So there's no difference on his duties and, let's say, the local king here, you know, it's the same, just he manages the universe, so.
Is it that the understanding of the karma mimamsas is wrong when they say that the particular text that they choose about the word having an object and the relationship is determined? So basically,
yes,
the object is supposed to be a non-living thing, but they are connecting it to that, to a jiva which is living, but actually object should be position that is
indifferent. No, it's beyond that. It's not that it's an object meaning it's dead matter. It means that there's a potency, like here, there's a table here, but there's a particular potency that makes table. So the tableness of this, this what we see is then it acts in this way, that's the tablehood. Then there's the specific table that's doing that. So depending upon the table, what it's made of, how it's been done, how it's, then the tablehood manifests nicely the tableness. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, if the leg's falling off, then the tableness is not so good because it's supposed to keep things off the floor, but if the leg falls off, then it slants and then the things roll off onto the floor. You understand? So Indra is the thing. They're installing Indra in a pot or in a yantra or, you know, in a fire, something they're doing. But the point is those are the gross forms. That's why they'll say it's their only mantras. Because they don't become the pot. That's a pot. But that's the place where we put, this is the ritual. They're not even asking, why is the ritual like that? You know, why couldn't they just do it all in the mind? You know, but the point is that they do it all in the mind. That means the results might be in the mind, and they want gross results, so therefore they do gross things. You understand? So the principle of Indra is an eternal principle. Then the particular jiva who's fulfilling that may be temporary, but it's not the jiva as the jiva that's fulfilling, it's the jiva in the capacity of Indra that's fulfilling it.
Because we saw in the last class about how the Yama carries the stuff and the Varuna carries the museum.
Yes.
So that's been defined.
That's defined, yes.
Yeah, that's been defined. Yeah. So that can be considered as the object in contrast with the world.
No, but why does it have to be an object in the way of it's just, and you're saying it's the same thing again, it's back to just dead matter. The potency is important, and so that potency is therefore imbued in dead matter. Now whether we call it a conscious or an unconscious entity, that depends upon whether it fits in the 8,400,000 species of life, you know, or whether it's a rock or a chair. Right? So that's the thing, is that it's still that potency, and then the person taking that personal aspect of them fulfilling that. So because they are fulfilling those duties, that credit is given to that jiva. Mm-hmm. Like let's say, I think our Indra is Purandara?
Purandara.
Yes, so therefore that jiva is Purandara, Indra, he gets the benefit and the respect and the position of Indra because he's performing those duties. But actually that potency and position is not him. It's coming from Krishna. It's the eternal principle that's defined in the Veda. You know what I'm saying? Krishna killed everyone on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He let that known before they even started the battle. But who gets the credit for killing everybody on the battlefield? Arjuna. Like that. So that's the whole point, is taking part. Because, see, we're thinking, no, but Krishna is the one. But the point is for Krishna, that he is existence. He is everything. He is how the laws governing everything. He is how, in their interaction, what that produces. He is what that reaction is and that experience and all. He is all that. But that's not what's important to him, because that's just what he is. You know what I'm saying? Because there's no one, you know, no competition. You know, it's not that he has to be proud to be an American because there's Russians. Right? He's God. It's just the way it is. There's no competition. So it's just existence. So for him, what's nice is doing something with all that in interaction with the devotees. So that mood of doing, that's what's important. But it's not that the actions aren't there, because it's about the mood. Otherwise, see, we always tend to push it into impersonal, right? Oh, it's just the potency, so it's not about the person, so we don't have to care about the person. No, it's about the person. Oh, so then it's just about the affection and the interaction of the person, so we don't actually need the forms and everything. Again, it goes back to impersonal. Because if I just say, oh, it's just about the bhav, what's the bhav? It's impersonal. Right, that, so in any case, on either the controlling part or the enjoying part, right? The impersonal on one side is I'm the controller, therefore I'm in control, God's in control, somebody's in control, but it's about the control of it, therefore that's the important thing. So it doesn't matter who it is and the form and all that, so therefore we're being practical, we're just getting it done. It doesn't matter we step all over the devotees, because we're doing service for Krishna. That's the important thing. So that's impersonal from the impersonalist point of view. Right? Then you have the other, no, it's about the mood and that, and everyone getting together and just expressing that affection and all that. But that's also impersonal, because it's just about the affection. It's not about the actual relationship. So then it's impersonal, but using the side of karma. So that's why I say one side is the mayavadis, the other side is the sahajas. But it's the same principle, is that we're not accepting the personal aspect of God. You know what I'm saying? And then when we get tired of both of these, then we want to give that all up. Then you get voidism. You understand? So it always comes back to these basic elements. So when bhakti is there, that's when the thing takes on actual reality. Because before that, it's not that it doesn't exist, but it just doesn't have, it's not real because it's not connected to Krishna. It is Krishna, but we don't get the credit for that. Does that make sense? Yeah. But the Mimamsakas are wrong, because the eternality of the names and forms given in the Vedic hymns is seen in their connection to the eternal personality of Godhead, not to the temporary world. Right? They want facilities of the world. They see everything with the world. Therefore, then they don't see it connected with the Lord. Right? It means even if they say, okay, the Lord is, he's only supposed to give us these facilities. So they're not worried about all these higher forms. They're only worried about as long as they get the stuff. Right? Right. In other words, the beautiful lady that they marry should not be a mantra. Like that. And the gold and all that should be there, because it's of the world. Right, like that. Thus, even though the embodied devatas appear and disappear in time, their origin is the ever-present Supreme Lord. Right? That's what we're supposed to catch. They come and go because there's, you know, all the devastations and all this, but it's still the origin is the ever-present Lord. That means the principle of Indra is still there. Even though this Indra has disappeared, Indra still exists. That's why if a living entity is not qualified to be Indra, Krishna just does it, because he already is Indra anyway.
When he speaks about the disappearance of a demigod, let's say, you know, if you consider Indra, then when he leaves his body, and before the next Indra enters, it takes the position of Indra.
No, the other one comes first. Means this is part of the fun. You're sitting there on your throne, all the apsaras are there, it's all happening, you're the guy, and then in walks, then there's a festival going on, and what's that? And then you see, and they're walking in, and there's a new Indra, and his, you know, all the people are all worshipping him, all Brihaspati and all these ones that were before with you, and then you see he's bright and effulgent, and you look and your garland is fading, you know. So it's not that you just disappear. That's why, you see, you know, for the inauguration, the president is there. And one of them, I don't know, remember who it was. It was Carter or someone was explaining how you're there, you're the guy, everything's about you. And once you go up there and do that speech and hand over the things and all that, then he steps up the podium, you step back. There's a certain place you're supposed to stand. Once you move over to there, you know, you have people that are taking care of you, but all that attention that was yours before, all the audience, the television cameras, all the ministers and all the secretaries, all the bodyguards, it's all about the new president. You just suddenly just see like everything just disappears. And you're just another guy that, you're just a guy. You used to be the president, but you're just a guy now. You know, it's just, it may be on your own, you might have something people know about you or not, right? But the other one, you know, you have qualifications or not, you're the president, then everybody's looking at you. And then the other one, okay, if you have some qualifications, you can do something with speaking or teaching or business or something, then you may, you know, on that, but it's not because you were the president, then anybody cares. You know what I'm saying?
So they lack this particular understanding.
That yes, they.
That they think that there is a particular gap between the
there is no gap.
And appearance of the next.
There's no gap.
There's no gap.
But even if there's no gap, it's still changing, so it's still temporary. But what's the consistent thing? It's Krishna's potency. Mm-hmm. That potency is always there, whether it's manifest or not. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point. So they don't understand this principle. This principle of the formal and original cause.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't have a complete understanding of this. Like that. Okay, so Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10:36. He, the personality of Godhead, manifests himself in a transcendental form, being the subject of his transcendental name, quality, pastimes, entourage, and transcendental variegatedness. Although he is unaffected by all such activities, he appears to be so engaged. Footnote 32. Srila Prabhupada comments, therefore, an intelligent person who can distinguish between the transcendental activities of the Lord and the activities of the conditioned souls is also not bound by the reactions of activities, right? You're bound because you don't see the difference. If the Lord doesn't have that independence, why will you have? Not that you'll have it and they won't. So that's why it's not there. The point is Brahman is free, therefore, you know, how you say? And therefore Krishna is Brahman, therefore he's free, and you're Brahman, you're free, so everybody's free. But if Krishna is an illusion, so therefore he's just material energy, then why would you get out of material energy seeing that he's Muktipad? He's the one who gives liberation. But they're thinking, no, by my sadhana, I'll get the results of liberation. Does that make sense? They can't. Because they don't accept the person who... It's just like, let's say you want to get something done, right? You have to go to the government office, you know, go to Writer's Building, right? But you don't acknowledge or accept that the person sitting in that desk and all that has any authority or anything like that. You think that just by, I'm sitting there in the office, I got the papers in my hand, just by that it'll all get done. Will it get done? No, especially because you're in the Writer's Building. Who's sitting there in the Writer's Building? A Bengali. And so what does that mean? That means you're not personal, you don't get anything. Yeah.
So, I mean, if they don't, I mean, if we cannot, you know, somehow, if they're like stubborn and, you know, we cannot get through this, you know, this covering, then they just...
You're talking about Writer's Building or the mic?
Then they just go to hell, and then they evolve again, and we hope that.
But they'll come back to the thing. You can also put it that they'll go to hell means it's a hellish mentality. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Okay, now would we consider, what would we consider worse? You have a situation of, there's activity, but it's not that great. It gives some difficulty. Now and again, it's okay, but it's not anything special. Or absolute, total boredom.
Boredom is not good.
Yeah, okay, boredom is not good. Okay. Because the other one, you can do it for a while, because maybe it'll get better. Right? So, therefore, on the material platform, then there's an idea that something will be better. They'll work for us. So there's some inspiration. Right? So you're engaging all, though in a perverted way, the nature of eternality, knowledge, and bliss. But now, let us say for the Mayavadi, or the impersonalist, now they'll come to that impersonal platform. That means there's nothing. No inspiration to do anything. You're just existing. That's why it says for the devotees, Sayuja is hell. So therefore, those who go, they go to hell, because it's a hellish condition. We'll say, oh no, but they went to Brahman. But why would we consider that something good? You're merged in Brahman, you don't even know you exist, so what's special? You know? I get this studio, okay? Paint the walls shiny white. Put in about, you know, 10,000, maybe 20,000 watts or 100,000 watts of pure white light. We take you down to Marcel Marceau. He paints you white without all the red and everything's marking. We dress you in pure white like that, and we sit you down in that room in a white chair. How much are you going to enjoy it? Right? They don't even make a song about it, right? If it's blue, they make a song. If it's white, no song. Understand? So that's the point, is that it's a hellish condition. We take it that, oh, it's above, it's up there, oh, liberation, it's a no. It's just, for the devotee, it's just, you know, we're here. You know, we're in this room. So, now, yeah, okay, great. You know, are you sitting there and rolling in ecstasy because you're here in this room? No, you're doing something in the room. So that's the thing, is the impersonal position is a hellish condition.
So the only impetus is, the only reason basically why they take it up is because it is easy.
It's easy. They don't get the pain from fruit of activities. So they've decided not having the pain of fruit of activities is enjoyment. While the karmis, having the pain of the fruit of activities is enjoyment. Right? But for both of them, it's just a concept of the mind. So one is, I remove all the problems that have come up in karma, and those moments of removal is called enjoyment. And so they just will just clear the board in one, you know, fell swoop here, and then that's enjoyment. It's the same principle. It's just a matter of, are they willing to deal with the short-term removals, or do they just want to do it all as one shot? That's the only difference. So one's optimistic that I'll enjoy by removing it in this way, and the other's pessimistic, oh, you can't enjoy in that way, I'll just get rid of it all. But the principle of how they're trying to enjoy by removing material pain is exactly the same. That's why we're saying there's not really any difference. So they're materialists. So this idea that the jnanis is something special, their only specialness is that the concept of detaching from the material world, and that they could attach to the spiritual world. Is that what it says? That's the only glory. But in reality, then it's a hellish condition, because once you remove everything, then what's there? That's why the devotee doesn't put the focus on removing, you know, purifying his heart by removing sin. It's on developing love for Krishna. Now the sahajis say, oh, we don't need to then worry about that. Right? And the smart is, oh, we only have to worry about that. Right? But the point is no, it's about developing love for Krishna. Therefore, we do the activities that are recommended. By that process, the heart becomes purified. But the only advantage is that the pure heart means more Krishna consciousness. But if we simply purify the heart without adding more Krishna consciousness, you end up with emptiness. Does that make sense? So that's why the devotee give up the attraction to karma and jnana. They're both miserable. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Didn't ruin your day here. So. Okay. Okay. The Lord, as Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, conducts the three modes of material nature. From Vishnu is born Brahma, and from Brahma is born Shiva. Sometimes Brahma is a separated part of Vishnu, and sometimes Brahma is Vishnu himself. Thus, Brahma creates the different species of life all over the universe, which means that the Lord creates the whole manifestation, either by himself or through the agency of his authorized deputies. Right, so he's doing everything, whether he has someone do it for him or not, but the point is it's going to be his position. He's going to empower the jiva to do it. He's going to be more, you know, have more of a greater position, like a Shaktivesh, or he's going to just do it himself. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.36, purport. Okay. So he's unaffected by all this, though it appears he's so engaged. But he's only engaged, he's not affected by the results that are, he's affected, he's simply interacting based on the rasa, or the relationship with the devotees. That's all he's interested in. So, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.37-40. O King, know from me that all living entities are created by the Supreme Lord according to their past deeds. This includes Brahma and his sons like Daksha, the periodical heads like Vaivasvatamanu, the demigods like Indra, Chandra, and Varuna, the great sages like Bhrigu, Vyas, and Vishishta, the inhabitants of Pitri Loka and Siddhaloka, the Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Asuras, Yakshas, Kinaras, and angels. The serpentines, the monkey-shaped Kimpurushas, the human beings, the inhabitants of Matriloka, the demons, Pishachas, ghosts, spirits, lunatics, and evil spirits. lunatic is a species of life. The good and evil stars, the goblins, the animals in the forest, the birds, the household animals, the reptiles, the mountains, the moving and standing living entities, the living entities born from embryos, from womb, from eggs, from perspiration, and from seeds, and all others, whether they be in the sky, land, or in the water, land, or sky, in happiness and distress, or in mixed happiness and distress. All of them, according to their past deeds, are created by the Supreme Lord. Right, so all this is created by him. It's all his potency. So therefore, all the forms that go on and all that have their eternal position in that the potency of those is the Lord. Does that make sense? We don't attribute that no, my dog will be eternal. No, like that. But the principle of dog is eternal. Why? Because it's connection to the Lord. So we have to be careful. That's our understanding. Otherwise, you know, they're there. They're connected with the Lord. So therefore, the dog is worshipable like God. No, like that. It's the jiva is there as the dog. That's the form. But the form by which the living entity, by their past misdeeds, gets body, then that's going to be according to, arranged by the Lord. Right? But at the same time says, it doesn't matter, it's just the potency of the Lord and we don't deal properly, that's wrong also. So that's why this thing of that we don't have the attachment but we deal properly. We don't have attachment but we perform the activity. Right? We don't have the attachment, we have knowledge. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, because of our attachment, then sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana have meaning to us. But without attachment, that's then the approach in bhakti. That's what doesn't make sense. I have this knowledge because of the benefit I'll get. If I'm not going to get material benefit, why would I have the knowledge? Or I make the endeavor because I'll get a result that I want. I don't want that result, or it's not for me. Why should I endeavor? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, footnote 33. Srila Prabhupada comments, the varieties of living entities are mentioned in this list, and with no exception from the topmost planet down to the lowest planet of the universe, all of them in different species of life are created by the Almighty Father, Vishnu. Right? So nothing was left out here. It gave all the different groups like that on purpose, just to make sure that, okay, well, what about, therefore, no one is independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita 14.4, the Lord therefore claims all living entities as his offspring in the following verse. Sarva yonishu kaunteya murtayas sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahad yonir aham bija pradhapita. The material nature is compared to the mother. Although every living being is seen to come out of the mother's body, it is still a fact that the mother is not the ultimate cause of such a birth. The father is the ultimate cause of birth. Without the father's seed, no mother can give birth to a child. Therefore, the living beings, in different varieties of forms and positions within the innumerable universes, are all born of the seeds of the Almighty Father, the personality of Godhead, and only to the man with a poor fund of knowledge do they appear to be born of the material nature. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10, 37 to 40 purport. Right, so basically, all goes back to Krishna. Krishna is the source of everything. So that's the reason that in the mantras, the demigods exist. They're not just mantras. They exist because it's the potency of the Lord. They all come from the Lord. That's why you can say the principle of Indra is eternal. But the demigod being, the jiva being in the position of that demigod is temporary. Right? So both things function at once. So the connection is to the Lord, not to the material energy. Right? So for the karmakandis, they're worried about the material energy, so they'll naturally connect at this side. That's their mistake. The jnanis, they're interested in transcendence, so you can say, well, they're okay because they connect it to that side, but they only connect it to the impersonal aspect of that side. So then it's not complete. Does that make sense? So one will perform the recommended activities, one will understand the transcendental nature, but they're not doing both. So the devotee understands the transcendental nature and applies that to the recommended activities. Therefore, it comes out perfect. That combination is what makes it work.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanta Gaura Premanandini.